you know that. Okay, Ecclesiastes chapter 2 is where we are. A couple things just to remind you as you're turning there. The word Ecclesiastes means assembly. The writer, who is Solomon, refers to himself as a preacher. I shared with you before, this whole book is like he is giving a sermon. He begins by making a statement of vanity, and that basically all is vanity. Definition of that is that nothing can replace God in our lives. Everything else is empty. And everything else in and of itself, though God may use it, it's not the end in and of itself. And it will leave you empty. It will always leave you wanting, no matter how good it is. Because we were made by God for God, and only God can fulfill who we are. Everything else is vanity. So he begins by making that statement. Now we're in the portion where he's going to break it down. He's going to talk about all the different things that people go after to find fulfillment in life. And he deals with all of those things. And then he's going to close it out. He's going to close out his sermon by just making the final statement, which we, of course, we'll get to in 2017 or so. All right, we're at the 15th verse of chapter 2. He has dealt with, if you'll remember, he began by talking about striving after wisdom, which is a good place for Solomon to begin, and coming to the realization that if that's all you have, then that also is vanity. He goes then to talk about pleasure. And fulfilling the desires of the body, and how he has done that, and how that has left him empty also. And then last week we began looking at where he talked about the accomplishments of life, you know, the things that he had done, the things that, you know, the things of notoriety, the things that drew attention to himself, maybe awards and, you know, all those kind of things. You know how guys are with awards, don't you? How many of you guys still have your little league or
your letter?
Yeah, your letter thing up there. You still have that and yeah. Stuff. You still got it somewhere. So. that's when they wore leather helmets, right?
Leather jacket,
okay. So he talks about the vanity of great accomplishments. And though you accomplish great things, they too will leave you empty. You're never satisfied. And so he went back again in verse 12 last week, you remember, to talking about the difference between wisdom and folly, or wisdom and foolishness. And he said, certainly wisdom is better than foolishness. But again, wisdom is not what we're created for. That's not what we ought to be seeking. We ought to be seeking after God. So if you stop at wisdom, still that is vanity, though wisdom is better than foolishness, right? So there are some things even in the earthly system that are better than other things. And your life will be a little bit more fulfilled within the realm of this temporal existence, but certainly not when we talk about why we were created by God and for God. So we continue in that thought. Verse 15, he says, "So I said to my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said to my heart, this is also vanity." Now that's an interesting little phrase to use there in verse 15. Is there some familiar verse that out of the New Testament that verse kind of reminds you of? It's not a direct quote, but it's kind of talks about the reality that's found in verse 15. Anybody know what I'm thinking of?
Jesus said, "This night your..." Was it
that your
soul will be required
of
you?
No, not that one.
Where is it? The rain falls on.
Yes, that thought. Yeah. That thought. What did Jesus say? It rains on both the just and the unjust. Okay. Now, he uses the change here. He talks about the wise and the foolish, and he says, basically says, whatever happens to the foolish happens to the wise also. In other words, you are not excluded from events and circumstances and situations in life simply because you're wise, and you could even say simply because you're just and someone's unjust. It does rain on both the just and the unjust. And again, I think you can use rain as two different things. Sometimes I think we always approach that with a connotation that something bad, rain, and all. But you can flip that around and say something good. Good happens to the just, and good happens to the unjust. Bad happens to the just, bad happens to the unjust. Here, he draws that with the fool and with the one who has wisdom. And so, once again, he says this leaves him empty. Vanity. This leaves him empty. Wisdom cannot fulfill him as he goes through the events of life, as he deals with the events of life. Wisdom is not the, wisdom is not the ultimate answer when things happen in life. Does wisdom help? Of course it helps. But it's not the answer. Okay? Verse 16. For there is no more remembrance of the wise man than the fool forever. Well, that's a good thought. Okay? No more, and he goes, since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come, and how does a wise man die? Basically, as a fool dies. Well, that's, you kind of think, oh. Remember what he's saying here. Remember the struggle that he's saying here and stuff. He's trying to help us understand how our life has meaning and where meaning comes from in our life. And any substitute, even the most desirable substitute, will leave you wanting. It kind of gets me thinking, that when Solomon asked for wisdom from God, okay, initially asked for wisdom. And again, we talked about, most of us believe that this was written when Solomon was an old man. He'd been through it. He'd experienced it. When he asked for wisdom, I always wondered in the back of my mind after reading all three of his writings and stuff, what if he had asked, Lord, I just want to know you more? What if that would have been his request? Now, wisdom was not a bad request, of course, but I just wonder, And I wonder in our lives how often we go to God for the things of God rather than go to God for God. And do we not approach it this way? God, if you will just give me this, then my life will be complete. God, if you will just do this for me, then I'll follow you. I'll trust you all the days of my life. And I'll never have done it. God, if you just give me this, I'll never ask you for another thing. At least for not 15 minutes. Okay?
And in reality, if you seek after God,
isn't that what Jesus said?
Yeah.
If we seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, then what's He say? All the other things shall be added unto you.
Desire would be of what God would desire for us. Yeah.
What is the natural inclination of man? To seek for the things from God rather than seek God. As a matter of fact, the ultimate extension of that is recorded for us, or the ultimate impact of it, let me put it that way, of that is recorded for us by Paul in Romans chapter 1, where he says, man has moved to a place where they begin to worship the creation rather than the creator. Therefore, God has handed them over to a reprobate mind to do things that are so ungodly and unacceptable. You see, some people think that sometimes we read that wrong and say, we just tie it with the homosexual thing, but that's really not what it's about. What it's about is man's heart being so far away from God that not only do they move past the stage of just desiring things, they turn the things into that which they worship. And once that happens, then God hands them over to a reprobate heart to do all kinds of incredible evil things, contrary to nature itself. Okay? So, I think it'd be important for us to learn in the church that we're in, the evangelical community, God, teach me to desire you more. Teach me to want you more. Was it John Piper that wrote the book on being a Christian hedonist? What was the name of that? There was something else going on in that book. Desiring God. Desiring God. And when I first read the subtitle, I go, oh my, what is this? And then when you get into it and stuff, whether you agree with all of his views or not, what you find out, he has a great point there that we exist for God, and the deepest desire of our heart needs to be for God. And once again, it goes back to this, that the only thing will ever fulfill our existence is God himself. So why do we keep running after everything else other than God? Mary?
I went back and refreshed my memory on what Solomon actually asked for. And he, after commenting that the people were so great a number, he said, therefore give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours? So I think his intent started out very honorable.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It was how to lead this people. And then somehow along the way, as all the things came, he wanted wisdom on everything and to experience everything. And he lost the focus.
And basically, his testimony here in this sermon is that he did experience everything. He pretty much says, I tried everything. You know, I've been down that path, and I've tried everything, and I found out that everything is emptiness and vanity. All right, so life happens to the wise and to the fool. Death happens to the wise and the fool. The wisest man that ever lived is not here now. And the most foolish man that's ever lived.
But, no, there's still something.
Yeah, there's still company. I'm going to let that one go, but thank you, brother. So, all right, we're moving on from that. Most of you have lost someone that's very close to you, someone in your life, a parent or kid, child or something like that and stuff. And there's always in our minds, because it's real fresh, we're right there with them, there always is in our mind a remembrance. And I just use, you know, my mom and dad, very close remembrance to them. When I talk to my kids about them, there's still the remembrance of that and stuff like that. But the next generation will not even know them. So, I mean, it's just a way of things. It's just a way of thinking. We're only here for a moment, and the real impact I think that we will are privileged to make is the impact we make as we submit to God and let Him fill us, desiring God, as we would say, and let Him work through us. And I think that's even part of the promise of the Bible, that type of thing will touch generations yet even to come. That type of godliness, even though they may not ever know your name. Or never have any relationship with you at all, that type of godliness can reach down to several generations, which is a wonderful promise. Okay? Questions or comments on 15 or 16? Verse 17. Therefore, I hated life, because the work that was done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and the grasping for the wind. So basically, all effort of life was meaningless, and something that you could never grab onto, grasping for the wind. Okay, and you know, I think there's a sense of frustration here as this older Solomon is looking at his own life and looking back and saying, you know what? Look at how much I missed. I'm just wondering, have you ever done that where you sit back and you look at the years gone by and say, wow, I wish I would have trusted the Lord earlier, better. I wish I'd have been more surrendered to the Lord. I wish I'd have done this with my children. And I, you know, we go through all of these kind of things and stuff. It's not an uncommon thing. But here again, Solomon is pretty much getting to a place where he says everything he's done in life has left him empty. Now, I got to ask you this: from biblical evidence, what kind of father was Solomon?
Not a very good
father. Okay. What kind of husband was he? Well, I guess which one of the 700 wives you want to go ask? So okay, you know, where would you go? So,
yeah, exactly.
He was the richest king that Israel ever had. Okay. Probably the most worldwide, he was probably the most influential king that Israel ever had. He really, from everything from a human perspective, he had the world by the tail. Would you agree with that? He had people coming and giving tons of money and possessions just to hear him speak. Okay, and yet when it's all said and done, he actually says, you know what, I hate life because life itself has left me empty, and everything that I thought I could latch on to, get a hold of, is like grasping for the air. Okay?
I think he epitomizes the term burned out.
Well, this book is very appropriate for Western the Western mindset, maybe even more than for the Eastern mindset. When you look at, you know, the different world mindset, this book is really more, it applies a lot to us, particularly the American Christian church. Because we are, if we're just brutally honest, we're very materialistic. Not only as individuals, but as churches. We're impressed by our holdings. We're impressed by our buildings. We're impressed by our bank accounts. We're impressed by those things. And again, none of those things are evil in and of themselves. But unfortunately, for some in the church and for whole churches, they have become the reason for their existence. And again, what will they do? They'll do the same thing they did for Solomon. They'll leave us empty. If we approach it, once again, if we approach all these things as gifts from God in order to do the ministry that God has called us to, as we're so close to God in relationship, loving Him and seeking Him, then He will multiply those things, and He will make those things do things we can never even imagine. We just have to. That's why one of the reasons why this is a good book for us to study is it really touches where the American church. I think it does where the American church is, much like King Solomon. I don't know that a lot. This would have a great impact to some of our brothers and sisters who have nothing in parts of the world. They would look at this and stuff. This really touches on the prosperity teaching that's in the church today, which actually is telling people that's where you're going to have joy. That's where you're going to get what you're going to. You can get whatever you want from God type thing, and somehow that's going to make you happy. And yet, at the end, it's going to be the same thing. It's like grasping for the wind. You know, if you sit with someone who's left this world, or you sit with them as they're going through that process of leaving this world, it's an interesting thing to notice how quickly the things of this world lose value. It's no longer, you know, a concern about how you're going to pay your bills or how much money you got or what kind of car you got. That's not even an issue at that time. So, Dixie.
And that's another thing, you know, that we are such a materialistic country that we are so hated, I believe, aren't we? As a nation, we are so hated for that because they believe in other countries that our Christian values don't correlate with that.
It doesn't match up.
Right, doesn't match up.
And I guess we go back to that thought is, do we understand that we are blessed to be a blessing to the world?
Yes.
Has God poured into our life that we would pour into other people's life, or have we bought into this concept that we've been blessed so we can tell people how blessed we are? That ought to really be a concern for us. All right, let's go on to the next issue that he brings up. He moves from that to he's going to talk now about hard labor. Okay? Is there anything wrong with working hard? No, of course not. But if you live for your job or your job is your life, then I think we cross the line on some of that stuff. Let's see what he says. It says, then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. Okay. Isn't this interesting how he wants to hang on to... You spend your whole life building up something only to leave it behind? And then he goes on to say this. Verse 19 is an interesting verse. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? Well, that's a great question. You know, when you work hard, and again, there's nothing wrong with hard work. You don't just want to hand it to somebody who's going to treat it with disdain and in a foolish manner. You do want someone to have it or be blessed by it that will be blessed by it, but not just to throw it out. It makes little sense. So his concern is, you know, he's got to leave this to someone who will come after him, and he doesn't even know who that will be or how they will treat what he has done. And by the way, this really touches on the Western mindset, because at least when I was growing up, maybe some of this changes. I don't know. Maybe you can tell me this. Usually when the men in my dad's generation and part of my generation, they would mostly identify with what they did. They would identify with their job, with their occupation. it was where most of their life was spent. That's true. And rather than identify, you know, on a lot more personal level, they were pretty business, you know. Is that true or not? What's your guys' experience? Okay. Nobody wants to talk. Okay.
Well, a lot of people, I think, use their occupation as a status symbol.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and again, I just think not a status. They think that's who they are.
Yeah.
So, Kathy.
I think we do that in church too.
I think we do.
Somebody asks you, you know, okay, you're a Christian. Well, what do you do in church? Yeah. What do you do? Well, I do this and I do this and I'm this and, you know, and that's how we identify ourselves.
And let's get a little bit more personal. That we will do that with our kids. We're very concerned with how our kids are performing in different things, be it sports, be it their jobs, be it their academics and stuff. And there's nothing wrong with any of those things. But we as Christians never ask the question, rarely ask the question, how's your kid doing? How's your son doing? From a spiritual aspect. You know, how can I pray for your kids? How, you know, what are they struggling with? How's God using? Whatever, whether it's a good thing or whether it's something we rarely even communicate on that level. We communicate on the level of mostly the way the world does. You know, my kid just won the got all-star team or whatever like that, or straight A student, or and my other kid's not quite as smart as my first kid, and then we start pitting them against each other, and it's just kind of interesting concept of how we do this, and we identify. We identify ourselves and others not as precious, unique souls created by God for God, once again, but by our performance. And it's no wonder that a lot of people view the church as being nothing but a performance-based organization where you're accepted if you perform well, and you're rejected or you're punished if you're not. You're loved if you're a good performer. You're not so loved if you're not quite the performer. Cliff.
I think I shared with you that illustration of what I experienced when I traveled to London in 1979. We got to go to Spurgeon's Tabernacle. And we were there, and, you know, Spurgeon was probably the epitome of the greatest super church pastor from the 1800s. They built a tabernacle that seated 10,000 people, imagine it, filled in, you know, different services. And it burned, or it was rebuilt, I think, two or three times after Spurgeon, each time smaller. We were in an auditorium that seated about 3,000, and they were running. They come up, but they were running now 300. And so that's an example. Now, we live in the day of the super church. You know, we're building this. It's going to last forever. And it doesn't. Those kind of things, even in our spiritual mind, you know, I'm doing something spiritual here. You know, there's some who follow. I think his brother followed him, and it did well for a while, and then it went on, you know, and then down.
A tour of Europe, it would be a very eye-opening tour. Some of you have been over there and stuff. Many of those great churches, not just Spurs, are museums.
Yes, they are.
You know? Mm-hmm. And there's nothing to keep it from happening here. Some of the mega churches here, pastor falls, and all of a sudden the whole thing starts to implode upon itself, and it's kind of, well, anyways.
We like to think we don't have that. It's not. We're doing something that'll last.
Yeah.
We struggle the same way because it's still our human effort in a lot of it. Even though God's at work in all of this, and there's certainly souls that He could point to in eternity. The trappings, all the other stuff that we see a success, you know, the big buildings.
Well, and isn't that what Solomon said? There's nothing new under the sun. What will be has been. Mm-hmm. And the cycle of this and stuff. I'm hoping for myself and for those in this church and close to us that somehow we get a grasp of what he's trying to say here and move beyond just the way. You know, I mean, really, to move to a place of really desiring God and really seeking God, I think that's the answer. And I'm not sure I know how to facilitate that. I want to encourage it, but I don't know you know, I don't think there's a 1-2-3 process where everybody does this and they'll be there. I think it has to happen with the Holy Spirit touching each heart, of course. But I think it needs to also be the intent of the body of Christ. That's where the body's heading. And we want everybody to be a part of it. Realize not everybody will be a part of it, but we want everybody to be a part of that. All right, verse 19 says, yet, and he goes on to talk about this one, whether he's the wise man or fool. He says, yet he will rule over all my labor which I've toiled, in which I've shown myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. This is also emptiness. Verse 20, therefore I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. For there's a man who labored, whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This is also vanity and a great evil. That's a pretty strong statement, and a great evil. Not sure, again, you can approach this as you break this out. I'm not sure that the evil is like the devil type evil. You almost want to put this like a great injustice. Okay, do you see what I'm saying there? This is, I toil for all this, I work for all this. He's really talking from a personal standpoint. I toil, I work for all this and stuff. I'm about to leave, and someone else gets this. That's not good. That is an evil or an injustice that is taking place. In other words, I work for all this, I should be able to enjoy all of it. You know. And you look at some people do that right now. They work real hard, their first 20 years of adulthood, hoping to retire and be young enough to enjoy what they have and stuff, you know. I remember with Mom and Dad, they didn't have anything, but they were worried about what they were going to leave, like all parents. What are we going to leave and stuff? I said, listen, all your kids are grown. You just burn the whole thing up and don't leave anything to anybody. You know, but this evil here, unless someone has a different, and I encourage you to share, I really think that he's really talking about this, an evil as he perceived it upon himself, an injustice to himself, because he does not actually get to enjoy the fruits of his labor. Someone who didn't get it, or who didn't work at it, is going to get it. And that's not right. Yeah?
Might use the word misfortune.
Okay. Misfortune.
Kind of funny though, because it seems like that's all he's been doing lately is enjoying it all, and
isn't that interesting? But I guess that would be a great point, though. Even though he has spent all his life enjoying what he's done and stuff, it has left him so empty that, again, he's speaking, I'm not satisfied. And I guess the question could be, could a person live long enough to enjoy all of it? I mean, if you live 900 years, you'd still be saying it's not enough. It's the way we are. Part of our nature as human beings is it's never enough. And I think that's part of what he's trying to say here. And think about some people said, if I just had, you've heard, if I just had what Solomon had, I would never complain. You know, if I had all that he had, and the position, the power, and you know, and the money and the notoriety and the popularity, I'd never complain. Yet you can see at times there are things that are expressed by some of the richest people in the world today where they express their emptiness, their loneliness, and some of them will turn right around and give huge sums of money to this thing or that thing, somehow hoping, I think, that will kind of soothe what's going on inside them and meet some need, but it doesn't. It doesn't. Again, the point is that only God can bring satisfaction. We need to learn that, because we struggle with dissatisfaction, even as Christians. Okay? Relationships don't bring us complete satisfaction. Associations don't bring us complete satisfaction. They can be good. They can be wonderful. But, you know, that's why when I try to counsel with married couples and stuff, I try to always focus them to the husband. You need to be focused upon God. Your wife needs you to put Christ first, and to her the same thing, and then your kids need you to put Christ first. And I have somebody go, well, we need to get our relationship right, and then we'll turn to Christ. No, you won't. You know, you've got to be focused upon God. You've got to make Him first, because He's the only one who can make the marriage what it needs to be, the family what it needs to be. And even a lot of, quote, Christian approaches do it just the opposite. Let's fix our relationship, then we can fix our relationship with God. And sometimes they'll use that one verse we're talking about. If you have a problem with your brother, before you bring your gift to God, an altar, go make sure it's right with your brother. And they'll use that as but that's not at all what he's talking about there. You didn't see. My wife needs me to love Jesus more than anything. And I need her to do the same thing. Then I can be the best husband that I can be for her. It's the same thing in the church, because we are a family. Okay, that we need to be in love with Jesus so much so that relationship with Jesus would be a blessing to brothers and sisters, an encouragement, a challenge even at times, and all those things that are part of being a family. So, but other than that, again, it results in vanity. It results in emptiness. Verse 22. For what has man for all his labor, and for the striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun? That's a great question. It goes on to say, for all his days are sorrowful and his works grievous, even in the night his heart takes no rest. This is also vanity. Okay. You could tie this with the thing, there's more to life than things, acquiring things. There's more to life than just work. There's more to our existence. Work is necessary. Work is a good thing, and actually we're instructed in the scripture to work, but we're not instructed to make our work our life and the most important thing in our life.
Just kind of pick off of what Jesus said. What good will it be for a man if he gains the whole world yet forfeits his soul? I mean, we're exchanging our life for something, Jesus says. And this is exactly what Solomon says here. We're exchanging our life. And what we exchange it for here, is, you know, the secular and all that, is not going to cut it. It's God alone that can fill that
void. Yeah. How many, you know, you think about this, life seems like it's long at times. At other times, it seems very short. And yet the reality is, the Bible says it's but a vapor. We're just here. We're here for an instant, you know. And as we get older, most of us would testify, it seems like it goes faster. Someone will say something to me now and say, well, that was 4 years ago. I said, that can't be 4 years ago. You know, it can't be that long ago. It seems like it was only a couple months ago. And it was 4 years ago. So things happen, and I think and life moves along faster, and we are only here for a moment. And you know, it's how do we make life count? How do we make life meaningful? And I think as long as our priority is making it meaningful just here on earth, then we're going to miss the boat, because we'll always be focused on things, and we'll be using God simply as, from a utilitarian perspective. And you know what I mean by that is, he's just there to give us what we need. And that can be reflected a lot in our prayers. You know, look at your own prayer life. Look at my own prayer. How much of that is to ask for things? How much of that is worship? How much of that is desire of what I want? And how much of it is acknowledgement of who God is? And ever asking God in prayer, God, I want you to be in me the fullness of who you are. Okay, it's reflective in our approach, and again it leads to emptiness if it's all just about what we're going to get here or what we're going to leave behind. We've said it before. I've said it many times at funeral service. The greatest heritage that we can leave the generation to come behind us is not anything material, because they can go through that very quickly. Point made. You know, they can go through it very quickly. The greatest heritage that we can leave our kids is something that touches eternity. what they do with that, of course, will be their choice in that stuff. But hopefully we've lived so close to God that our kids know that it's real. The greatest words I've ever heard from my grown son, I heard last week when he said, "Dad, we know that your faith and Mom's faith was real because we saw it every day." That's what I'm trying to challenge. Son, you need to be in church. You need to be under teaching and stuff like that. He said, "Well, Dad, I know," and this stuff. And he said, and I said, "Well, you know, one thing we didn't want to do was to let, you know, we didn't want to be one thing, one place, one thing, another. I mean, our faith is more than just a group of statements, or it needs to be who we are." And when you hear your grown son say that, that's a great thing to hear from your grown son. And then you just sort of try to fight back the tears and then beat him at golf, and I lose at that too. So what is that, you know? But you know, that they know that the next generation knows that is a huge thing. Because I don't know what else of value that we can leave them. You know, a few dollars, a little bit of material thing. But other than that, you know what? I want to take... It sounds selfish, but I want to take my kids to heaven. I know I can't do that. You understand what I'm saying? But I want to see my kids in heaven. I want to see my grandkids in heaven. I want to see generations that I don't know in heaven. And I think unless we get back to having our focus, like, instead of on these things that he's talking about, and on God alone, then we're really playing this huge gamble. Not only with ourselves, and not only with those around us right now, but I think with generations. That's pretty scary to me. That's pretty scary to me. Thoughts or input before we move on?
Proverbs 27:20. Hell and destruction are never full, and so the eyes of a man are never satisfied.
Okay. So go ahead.
So, like, if he said that up there earlier in his life. Yeah, and then that's Solomon.
Yeah, right? That's out of Proverbs 14:23.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing
wrong, yeah, but he had a fuller understanding later that even that prophet is temporal and in the perspective of, you know, the spiritual realm.
There certainly is a balance, is there not? Paul says, you know, basically, he says if you don't work, you don't eat. So is there a need to work? Of course there is. And I think it's a biblical principle to work. Laziness is not an acceptable thing. But once again, we don't exist. That's not who we are. Wedge?
Staying in Proverbs 9:10, taking it right to the very foundation of what you're talking about, Tim, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days will be multiplied and years of life will be added to you. So starting with the fear of the Lord, taking it right to that, and then grounding yourself in that knowledge of him is going to...
And the promise of days and years is not necessarily numerical.
No.
As much as, what am I going to say, not merely quantity as much as the promise of quality. You know, walking in the peace and the assurance of a presence of God. Because there are some people that live for a lot of years and lived a lot of miserable years. Okay? And I think his intent is for us to be able to live in him, whatever years he's given us. All right, verse 24. There is nothing better... Well, by the way, he's going to draw a little conclusion here. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw is from the hand of God. He's giving a little balance here. Don't you see that? You know, again, the Christian life is not just this stoic existence where you're not allowed to enjoy the fruit of your labor, if you will, or the blessings of God. Everything in proper perspective. Some people say everything in moderation, if you will. It's not what we live for, but joy is a part of what God has given us. And the ability to enjoy what God has poured in our life is an important thing. We might call it rest or relaxation or whatever, but he, it's not just this thing of you cast, you know, wasn't it the Stoics, Doug, that did that, that said nothing good in the world and you had to refrain from any of that stuff? I'm thinking about that. Right. I'm trying to think, what did the Paul call them people that did that were? There was a word that he used there. It's a denial of everything. Denial of self. I can't think of. Huh? No, not the Gnostics. Well, Gnostics were Stoics, but... Yeah, asceticism. Mm-hmm. The term they use there. Ascetic. So, yeah. So, that of you know, it's wrong to enjoy anything. Well, that's not what the Bible teaches. The Bible doesn't teach that anywhere. Part of walking with God is the promise of joy, is it not? Mm-hmm. And fulfillment and all of those things. So you know, labor is not a bad thing. He's given a little balance here. And enjoying the labor, eating and drinking and enjoy the labor. He actually says, I saw this was from God also. Even in the system that God put together for his people, Israel, did he not have celebration times? To reflect on the goodness of God and the work of the people and enjoy one another?
Yeah, in fact, this book, Ecclesiastes, is read at the Festival of Tabernacles, which is a celebration time of harvest. That's when they read this, because it speaks of the celebration of life and enjoying good things.
Yeah. Okay.
I think we have to keep kind of a balance. I know that, you know, all scripture is inspired and everything, but you see writing pre-Christ, pre-Christian in a lot of ways, and I think if you look at the Christian life, I think you can speak of, in a sense, your labor is not in vain in the Lord. You have those kinds of things. So I find that even though he knew God, he didn't know him in the fullness that we can know him. And so, in a sense, there's
a search
to read and also put Christ into what he's saying here. And I think he does with God, but I think we've got a fuller understanding of it. And certainly our labor and I think it is a good life, the Christian life, and what we experience. And so... I think there's a joy that we can have that I don't think you could fully enjoy.
And I think Paul talked about this being to the, even to the Old Testament believers, our faith as Christian faith was a mystery to them. A mystery that they didn't, it wasn't quite solved for them, but it's been clarified for us by the Holy Spirit. So, yeah. Verse 25, though, what's he say? For who can eat and, or who could have enjoyment more than I? He's just speaking of his position in the world, guys. For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner, he gives the work of gathering and collecting, and he may give to him who is that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Now, this is an interesting verse that's not easy. At least not easy to me. So if you got it, you can explain it to me. But this is one of those grabbing it, one of those where those who want to grab a verse or a concept out of the scripture without dealing with the whole of it love to grab this one. They'll use another one that's, I think, it's earlier in the New Testament, in the Old Testament. It's called, God has made you the head and not the tail. And they'll use this, the prosperity guys love to use this verse right here and that verse right there to say, God intends for the ungodly world to pour into your life riches. Okay? And notice here, if you read this in certain ways, you can see, they can say, see, Solomon even said that God gives wisdom and God gives knowledge and God gives joy to the man who is good in his sight. So, again, how you define those terms, you can make a case for saying, you see, if you do right, then God will bring prosperity into your life. If you don't do right, the reason you're poor, the reason that you're working for somebody else, the reason that your money's you got like holes in your money bag and it's going to everybody else is because you're not living right before God.
But Jesus says something about that in John 9 when he's talking to the man that was born blind from birth, and mm-hmm. the disciples ask, you know, who sinned, the man or his parents? And Jesus said, neither sinned. I mean, they just assume that because he was blind, he
right.
done something wrong. But Jesus said it was so that God could be glorified. So that...
I think
that prosperity
yeah,
gospel thing there.
You're exactly right. And also to think that the fullness of understanding of existence and how God works in people's life, to throw it into one verse out of context, mm-hmm. you can go anywhere with that you want to. Including, you know, you're sick because you sinned. And you're not well because you don't have enough faith to be well. Mm-hmm. And you're struggling financially because you're not trusting God, and God doesn't see you as good in His eyes. I mean, think about the concepts that can come through this and stuff when it can be grasped and taken out of the context of the whole. We could spend a little bit of time, and we talked about, you know, these three words that he used here before: wisdom, knowledge, and joy. I think they all are gifts from God to His children. I have no doubts about those things, but again, we need to be very careful. We don't let the world define these things for us. Joy is not a giddiness or a goofiness or it's not even a promise of quote happiness. There are people who live, good Christian people who live their whole life filled with very little happiness. You know, you saw this week, I know you probably didn't say it, but you saw the report, 21 of our brothers whose heads were taken off over in the Middle East by ISIS and stuff. Those Egyptian Christians, those Coptic Christians, we met those when we were over in Egypt. Matter of fact, our guide in Egypt when we went through on our trip was a Coptic Christian, and he talked to us about that. And they were, listen, there's a lot of stuff going on right now, but those Coptic Christians under the Egyptian, I'm not talking about ISIS now, but just under the Egyptian leadership, have suffered persecution for centuries. And even up until recently, there's a reason why all those Egyptian Christians were not in Egypt, folks. Just up until recently, you saw we stood on the bridges where they had raped this one news lady. I don't know if you remember that, and they were beating Coptic Christians and all this kind of stuff out there in the public squares. We stood on that bridge. It's right by the Nile River, and so these people have, for the most part, have known no real peace in this world, no real. You know, a place where they could just settle and relax and practice their faith from no real happiness is something very rare to them. But at the same time, when we talk to our brother who was our guide over there, he's just amazing. You could see the love that he had for the Lord. You know, he, and certainly they have different practices than we do. We're not Coptic Christians, but the love for the Lord was real. You know, and I thought it was more than interesting that the ISIS people, when they talked about the charge against those 21, it says these are the people of the cross. That's an incredible statement for your enemy to say about you. Oh, we hate you because you, and we're going to kill you because you're a person of the cross. It's an incredible statement.
General says kill them all.
Say it again. I'm sorry.
The general says kill them all.
Yeah. The general said that. I heard him. Yeah.
Better start doing it, or we won't have.
Yeah. So when we look at this, again, the joy is not just happiness or things that make you happy. It is that. That inner joy, that inner peace that only God can give to those who belong to Him and those who He loves. He gives those things to whom He loves. And there's, I don't see a whole lot of, in His explanation here in verse 20, a whole lot that has to do with material things, with money, with health, with any of those things. I see more of that, the gift that He gives us of Himself, that gives us the joy and the peace, the wisdom, the understanding, all of those kind of things.
And I think when it says, you know, wisdom, and He gives wisdom and knowledge and joy too, a man who is good in his sight. What makes a man good in God's sight is his relationship.
Yeah.
And we already talked about that. If you have that relationship with God, if you seek after him, well, then he gives you his outlook on life.
And we all know, we can all speak of things where the sinner seems like for a season that everything's going good for them. They're getting everything. They're getting by with everything and stuff. But ultimately, that will not be the case. We know that.
Pastor, I think verse 25, I think, is kind of the context, too. A little phrase there, for without him. He's referring to the hand of God, for without him. And I think we can describe so much from that. Who can even find enjoyment without him? I mean, and this carries on down, I think, the source of our joy. He rides that theme all the way through.
That's interesting, because my translation does not say for without him.
This is good translation.
Well, I guess
so.
For without him? Which actually makes more sense if he's drawn this good conclusion. It certainly makes more sense than the King. Mine is the New King James. Mindset, which is kind of why it sets in there, is almost confusing in the middle of. He's making a conclusion, and it seems to me he's making a wise conclusion. So verse 25 in my translation does not fit within that wise conclusion. It draws attention back to himself, because mine says, "For who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I?"
What
version do you have?
I have NIV. It says, for without him, who can eat or climb his joy?
And mine has a little star down that you go down to the bottom, and it says that other transcripts are translated without him.
I think that's a key.
That's probably a more... Yeah, it certainly is, because, see, I would pass by that. That's not in... So, interesting. And that really ties those three verses together.
And it keeps it in context.
Yeah.
His overall teaching from the last chapter all the way through.
Yeah.
It keeps it focused.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to mark my little thing to look down below here.
It's highlighted at the bottom.
Huh?
It says, following Masoretic text, Targum and Vulgate, some Hebrew manuscripts, Septuagint, and Syriac read without him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's what they translate the NIV from anyway, so of course it would say that. That's not the text that's receptive. This is what the text is receptive.
It was the text of the early believers, because they used that translation. The Jewish translation.
Think about Solomon. He had everything. So who could more than him say that, right?
Well, I mean, that's an approach.
That
that's the approach.
That,
yeah.
Whatever you want to think.
Okay. All right. We're going to stop there because our time is up. It is a good conclusion, though. And next week, come ready to sing the song with me.
Send
a recording. Well, that'll be for the birds. Okay. All right, let's have prayer and we'll be dismissed. Please remember those who would like to be a part.